I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It was a mediocre to bad weekend for Oklahoma sports. I guess you can say it like that. Oklahoma baseball drops its final in the series against Illinois State. The Sooners did take three or four games to win that series. Oklahoma now with two losses on the season. Not looking bad for Oklahoma baseball. Softball, on the other hand, drops two in a row to end their time out in California at the Mary Nutter Classic. We do have Chris Plank, the play-by-play voice of Oklahoma softball, coming up on this episode of the Sooner Nation podcast. We will talk about that and a lot more with Chris Plank. We're going to talk about some Oklahoma spring football as well as XFL. I want to get his thoughts on Bob Stoops and the Dallas Renegades. Basketball is where the heartbreak was. Sooners in a must-win situation in Gallagher-Iowa Arena, Bedlam round two, and they just get worked by Oklahoma State in a game that, again, they had to have it, and they were very, very lethargic. And so we got to talk about that as well and the implications of that. This is the Sooner Nation podcast. I'm Matt Hofeld. Thanks so much for being here with us. Now, the good news is for Oklahoma is that Colorado has looked at former UCLA head coach and Miami Dolphins assistant, most recently to be their new head coach, Carl Durrell. And that's the reason why that's good news for Oklahoma is obviously that means Alex Grinch is staying put. Now, if you read what we publish at Heartland Sports, heartland-sports.com, where you can pick us up, it was a long shot. And in fact, I even said in the article, my title was Colorado talking to Alex Grinch would be a waste of time. And I really believe that for two reasons. Number one, if he turned down Washington State, that's where Oklahoma fans should have been a little bit worried. And he turned it down, had no interest in that, no desire in that. He's not going to Colorado if he's not going to Washington State. Not that Colorado's not better to you know, Boulder, Colorado, maybe a better place to live than Pullman, Washington. The Buffs may be in a better situation personnel-wise than what the Cougars are in. But the reality is Alex Grinch has a track record at Washington State. He has ties there. He's got some inroads there. He's been there. He has served on that staff. That would have been some sort of a homecoming for him. And again, if he's turning that down, he's turning down anything else that's along that lines. But the second reason is I think this, and I've seen other people say this on Twitter, and I'm not jumping on their bandwagon other than I'm just agreeing. I think this staff is staying together for a while. I see this staff that Lincoln Riley has in place as a group of guys. They're all young. They want to prove it. They want to prove that they can win at Oklahoma. They want to prove that they can not just win the Big 12 and not just make the playoff, but that they want to actually prove they can get in the college football playoff and win a game. They can get in the college football playoff and compete for a title. And for that to happen, defense has to rise to the occasion. Things have to get better on the defensive side of the ball. Now, we saw improvement in 2019, a vast improvement from 2018. But again, if you listen to the Sooner Nation podcast, if you've read what we put at Heartland Sports, heartland-sports.com, you know that this defense, it's not just X's and O's that have to improve. It is personnel. And Alex Grinch has his first, the 2020 recruiting class, this cycle that just landed, that's his first full cycle. Now, he had a hand maybe in just a little bit of personnel for 2019, not much, if any at all. But 2020 is his, and 2021 will be his. And that's, I think that's where his focus is. That's where his mindset is. I'm going to prove that I can do this. And let's not forget, there were people who doubted Alex Grinch. His time at Ohio State, he had some criticism for that, even though he wasn't the one making the play calls. He wasn't the one that was in charge, but he was the co-defensive coordinator. And so there was some heat on Alex Grinch just a little bit. But I think he's not necessarily having an axe to grind, but he wants to prove to whoever is interested in seeing what he can do as a defensive coordinator at a program like the University of Oklahoma. And I think this is a tight-knit group of coaches. If you follow on Twitter, you saw that they all did a daddy-daughter date last week. This is a group of guys that are they're committed to each other and they're committed to winning. And it's going to take something pretty strong to separate those bonds. And the truth is, Colorado Buffaloes just aren't strong enough for that. Now, we're going to talk Bedlam basketball at the end, but we got to bring in Chris Plank. I'm pretty excited. It's been a while since we had Chris Plank on. He's going to take up the majority of this podcast, but we're going to talk about it all. We're going to start with softball. We're going to move on to football and then XFL. You're going to enjoy this interview. Chris Plank coming on the other side of this break.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, we're going to bring in a very special guest right now, the one, the only, Chris Plank. Chris, look, I think you have been making guest appearances on our podcast for about 4 years now, and I feel like every time you come on, your title of responsibilities in journalism and broadcast and radio just grows, so I don't even know how to introduce you anymore.
Oh, that's a really good point. So let's see, voice of Sooner softball, sidelines for football, anywhere else they want to put me, and then add to it, the local show from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Sports Talk Network, same station with T-Row. Oh, Sunday nights on Fox Sports Radio. And since the last time I came on with you, Sirius XM. So, Matt, yeah, I try to keep busy. If I'm ever down for a little bit, my wife always kind of points out it's a time when I could be making money. So let's go, man. I'm excited to chat with you. How have you been?
I've been great, man. You know me. I get around a lot, but home for a while and excited to talk some stuff. Softball going right now. We got spring football coming around the corner. XFL, I want to talk just some softball with you, though, because that's one of the key things here. Oklahoma coming back from California. Two losses on the weekend, one to Washington, one to Wisconsin. You know, three losses on the season, if you include Long Beach State from the weekend before. It seemed to me, now you're there front and center, you get to see, you get to experience it, you get to hear afterwards, but it seemed to me Long Beach State and Wisconsin, kind of a self-destruction type performance that the result of them lost, but Washington looked pretty dang good.
Yeah, I think in the case of the Long Beach State and the Wisconsin game, that's a tale of just two bad innings, right? I mean, I had my box score here in front of me, but that seventh inning going back to the game against Long Beach State was just very forgettable, where, again, what has kind of been a problem for this team this season reared its head, and it did in the seventh. It was walks, and, you know, Shannon Sale came in and walked three batters. The Sooners committed an error, and the next thing you know, Long Beach State had put four runs on the board in the seventh and one in a walk-off. And then you fast forward to yesterday against Wisconsin, same story, you know, and it was one inning. It was the second inning. They gave up four runs in the second inning, and all total, the Sooners walked eight batters and hit two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in two games, you have 18 free passes. You're not going to win many games. And, you know, it's kind of funny because you can look at the box score from Washington and say, well, you just got smoked, but eight walks, you know, you're looking at another situation where between, you know, five pitchers, you ended up with eight walks, and there was a very big price to pay every time you walked a hitter because Washington was going yard. Ari Kionis, who's there filling for Sis Bates at shortstop, had, I think, her first ever three-hit game, and the home run was her first. Jaylen Alchin, who hit a home run, she hit her first. And Bailey Klingler, who had two home runs, that was her first two-home run game ever. So, I mean, it was a myriad of issues in those three games. But I think, you know, Matt, it all boils down to one thing. No free passes, no free bases. And the Sooners have been made to pay every single time that happens. And I think it's fair to say that it kind of been one of the concerns heading into the year, with not necessarily knowing what the prognosis is going to be early for G. Juarez, and kind of working through that, giving the freshman an opportunity. But yeah, you know, bases on balls, free passes have definitely been a big issue. And then I'll add to this, you know, against Long Beach State, there was maybe one or two plays that could have ended the game that weren't made defensively. And then against Wisconsin, you know, they had a runner out at third that would have at least saved them a run in that inning, but obstruction was called. And then they, you know, they run a squeeze bunt, they run a double steal twice. So it was, you're not going to see in that Wisconsin box score any errors, but there's the kind of mistakes defensively that were made that are not indicative of a Patty Gasso coach team.
When you mentioned pitching and the limited use of Gisele Juarez, and that's something that's kind of been Patty Gasso's MO early in the season with her. I'm going all the way back to Paige Lowry, Paige Parker.
Yep.
Shannon Sale's been used a lot. Olivia Raines has looked good as a freshman. Are you surprised, though? You mentioned Shannon Sale with the walks. Gisele Juarez kind of had a couple of rough outings in just one inning that she's pitched in the various games. Are you a little bit surprised at how rough Oklahoma's pitching has? And I say rough, I think they're only like third in the Big 12 in total ERA right now. But compared to years past, does it surprise you a little bit?
Yeah, but I also I think, and this might be this is the glass half full eternal optimist in me when I make this point, I think Oklahoma is going to be better in the long run for it. And first of all, you know, whatever G is dealing with, there's incredible signs of progress based on seeing her in relief on Friday and then seeing her start a game on Saturday. Now, it didn't go well. She was gone after, one inning against Washington. But I think it's baby steps in her progression. With Shannon Sale, you know, Shannon has been just in the lights out this year. But for some reason, it's just she struggled against Seattle when it came to trying to make sure she could put the ball in the zone. I mean, it was a major issue for her on Saturday. And then again, going back to the Long Beach State game. So, but with that in mind, when she's on, she's been fantastic. I'm of the belief that the best pitcher on the team right now is Olivia Raines. And I don't know, you know, we were talking about this in the pregame show on Sunday. You know, if you come into this season with Gisele 100% and, you know, everyone's just clicking out of the gate, you probably don't get an opportunity to put Olivia Raines out there after a tough outing against Bryan and say, hey, just cut it loose, and to see her develop and what she's developed into. You probably don't put Macy McAdoo in a clutch situation against Arizona and count on her to get out. So, it's surprising, and I think it's frustrating right now, but I also think the signs of it were there. And, you know, not having Gisele during the fall and obviously using some of the younger pitchers in practice, I think that they've seen that the big challenge is to step their game up with location and not getting away with the same things you could in travel ball at times. And in high school, it's a different level pitching. And I think you've seen Macy McAdoo adjust to that. You've seen Olivia Raines completely adjust to that. Brooke Bestel's getting there. But I think in the long run, this is going to be better because Gisele's going to get back to 100%. You know, we'll see if we see her again this week. And Shannon's just got the control issues that rear their head every now and then. But I know it's frustrating to look at 12-2 and then a 4-3 loss to Wisconsin and not panic right away. But, you know, Oklahoma hasn't run through the Mary Nutter undefeated since 2012. Mm-hmm. So it's never an easy trip to go make. And the year they won the national championship, I think Michigan put like 14 on them. So I'm not going to get too concerned about it, but I think there's a positive to come from having to throw so many young pitchers here early.
All right, well, you already answered my next question. That's how good you are. I was going to ask you about some of the younger pitchers that have made an impression. You talked about Olivia Raines. You talked about McAdoo. So let's switch to the other side and talk about Kinzie Hansen and what Oklahoma is getting from her at the plate.
How good has Kinzie Hansen been? I mean, you you look up and down this roster and you started thinking about it in the preseason, some players that you thought might be able to step up and might be able to make a difference as the newcomers coming in. And, you know, Kinzie Hansen was one of the first names that everyone would come up with, the freshman out of Norco, California. And she's lived up to the hype. I mean, dude, she's sitting 447 right now. She leads the team with 16 RBIs. There's only, I think it's what, one game this season where she didn't have a hit, and she started every single game. She started at first. She started behind the plate. So I think that Kinzie has really carved herself out a nice spot, not just in the batting order. You know, she's your three-hole hitter. I mean, you start thinking about if, and again, this might change when Riley Boone gets healthy, but as it stands right now, Taylen Snow has been great in that leadoff spot. Jocelyn Allo has had a couple of multiple hit games, and including a big bomb on, what was that, Saturday, that, right, that was just crushed. And then you add to it, oh, by the way, there's a freshman hitting there in the three hole with a sophomore All-American behind her in a gray screen. Oh, and the hottest hitter on the team to start the season power-wise, Lindsey Elam. So what Kinzie Hansen's development has done is helped kind of settle down that top half for the lineup for the Sooners. You know, she is just as advertised, and she's got a great attitude. She loves softball. And again, not someone who was a first baseman. She was a catcher, but you watch her over there and she's getting comfortable. And, you know, I think, Matt, the thought was, if you want to get caught up in projecting ahead, many thought when Nicole Mendez would get healthy that, you know, depending on where the knee is, that probably first base might be the position for her as she, you know, continues to battle back from that torn ACL. But, you know, I don't know. Kinzie Hansen's playing really well over there, and I think it's going to be tough to unseat her. Now, we have depth issues. You know, you mentioned Kinzie Hansen. We can dive into the other freshmen, but this is one player who, and again, I know we're still very early in the season. What are we through? 14 games, and there's still a long way to go. But, you know, through this first part, the toughest part, I think, of the early schedule, whenever you play three straight series on the road, and, you know, North Coast California is not necessarily close to Palm Springs, so it's not like she's playing close to home, but I'm really excited for Sooner fans to see her this week inside the Marita Hines Field. It's going to be fun.
Are you surprised Lindsey Elam's leading the team in home runs?
Yes. Yes, I am. But I'm not going to try to overanalyze it too much. You know, Lindsey is just – right now they need her, right? They need her personality. They need her leadership because this is a tough team that is dealing with something that, you know – for a majority of these players, they haven't really dealt with. There hasn't been a lot of adversity throughout their softball career. So now you have Lindsey Elam, who is a great example of overcoming adversity and has led the way. Now, things kind of struggled for her after the Nebraska game. You know, she went 2-for-2 with 2 runs, 2 RBIs, and had a home run. And now she's 0-for-her-last-13. So, you know, again, she can be a great table setter, mentor, whatever it takes for overcoming adversity for this team that's now lost back-to-back games. But in that too, Matt, they need her to hit. And so am I surprised that she's leading or tied for the team lead with home runs? Absolutely. But, you know, it's a real-life what-have-you-done-for-me-lately world. And, you know, you can't – in those situations where you have opportunities, especially in that spot in the lineup, you know, over 13, the Sooners, you know, they need run producers there. So, to me, it's just a little mini slump for Lindsey. She started the season, I think, 0-for-her-first-5 and then went on that crazy tear. So, I would imagine she'll be bouncing back in a big way this weekend. But you really have to, you know, you really got to focus down, man. I mean, you're starting to see where pitchers have now adjusted to maybe any adjustment she's made. So, now she has to get in the lab with JT Gasso and kind of go through exactly what she needs to do differently, because it's a key part to this team's success is to have Lindsey Elam producing like she has.
And Chris, I would never ask you to predict if Oklahoma's Big 12 winning streak is going to come to an end in 2020. But what I do want to ask you is, if one of the Big 12 teams is going to snap Oklahoma's winning streak, who would you tab to be that team right now?
Oh, Texas. I mean, it hurts to say, but, you know, I get it that they finally got knocked from their perch this weekend by Duke. And if you really want to dig kind of deep, you know, maybe their early run and some of their early success isn't all that impressive, because, I mean, as maybe a run rule win over Tennessee looks nice, this isn't the same Tennessee team that we've seen. They kind of struggled to get by Utah, who, I mean, we'll get a firsthand look at coming up here in a couple of weeks. But they gave up 11 runs to Lipscomb before losing to Duke, and I know that they bounced back and beat Weber State, but they've got two big games on Tuesday. I don't know when this is dropping, tonight, whenever. But they've got two big games on Tuesday against the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana. And then they head out to Los Angeles to play kind of an odd one-off with UCLA on Thursday night. And, by the way, they're then in Fullerton, California, where Texas will play Michigan and Washington in four games. So we're going to learn a lot about Texas. But with that said, they've had a nice start. You know, they've put together a nice staff, and I felt like, and everyone kind of knew that was going to be what Mike White wanted to do. He's a guy that has pitching in his background, and, you know, between Miranda Ellish, what Courtney Day, Shaylen O'Leary, the freshman last year, they've used a couple of other different pitchers, including Ariana Adams, who kind of struggled. I think she was the one that got lit up by Lipscomb. But they got four pitchers that they've used rather consistently. You know, you look at those innings, you know, three of those pitchers have thrown 20 or more innings so far this season, and Adams is on the verge of double-digit innings. And, by the way, they have, in my opinion, one of the most effective leadoff hitters, and not just the Big 12 in college softball, which is A. Jefferson. And, you know, here's somebody that whose on-base percentage is at like 650 right now. So she's problematic, but I'm not going gaga over Texas right now. I think that there's still a lot to learn and a lot to prove. But with that said, if you ask me to predict the team that has the best chance to maybe unseat the Sooners, it would be Texas. The good news is, you know, Oklahoma gets them at home.
Right.
That series starts on March 20th. It's already sold out. And get this, that series starts on March 20th, and Texas will be coming off a trip to Tuscaloosa where they would have played Alabama twice. Mm. So just kind of odd scheduling on that front for the Horns, but – yeah, Texas is going to be interesting. And, oh, by the way, don't sleep on Adrian Gregory's team. That's the Texas Tech head coach. They had Washington beat. They had Washington beat and allowed them to tie the game in the seventh and then gave up six runs in the eighth. I don't know if Tech has the pitching that Kansas does, but it's going to be a little bit more entertaining, I think, this year in the Big 12.
Yeah, no doubt. I do think this is going to be a fun year of conference play for Big 12 softball.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Chris Plank, our special guest right now on the Sooner Nation podcast, play-by-play voice for Oklahoma softball, but also the sideline reporter for Oklahoma football, spring ball getting ready to get started. What are you most excited about seeing in spring football?
So many things, man. So many things. Obviously, I'll grab the low-hanging fruit. I'm excited to see what Spencer Rattler is going to do. I mean, this is, you know, I'm old enough to remember whenever Blake Bell was the dual-threat quarterback that was going to come in and change everything.
Right.
Rattler, to me, is probably as anticipated and as hyped of a quarterback recruit as the Sooners have maybe ever had. You know, it's just everything that is said, it's almost as if it's become mythical before he even stepped on the field. So I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see it firsthand. I want to be entertained by it. Mike, what's going to happen with this team at linebacker?
Right.
You know, Kenneth Murray moves on. Is it the Caleb Kelly and the Deshaun White show? Do one of the freshmen make an impact? You know, obviously Brian Meade, I'm a big fan of, but I understand that, you know, sometimes whenever you, I think what he had a bad play against Kansas, so everyone holds it against him forever. But he's on scholarship now. I think he's got an opportunity to do some nice things. Brian Asamoah, who was a physical freak last season, but then kind of tailored off, you know, is Witter, that freshman that we see a lot of. So I'm excited to see kind of what happens at that interior linebacker position. And, you know, honestly, Matt, I get a chance to probably have one of the greatest, if not the greatest, inside linebacker in Oklahoma history, and Teddy Lehman, to kind of bounce things off of and ask questions. And I think Brian Odom has become the best inside backers coach in the country. So I'm very intrigued by that. Who steps up as a pass rusher? Which of these young guys that maybe we saw a little bit of during the season, like a Marcus Stripling, maybe takes that next step and develops more than, say, one or two moves? And then I don't know. I don't know what the process is going to be, but I really want to find out when we can start planning on getting a Ronnie Perkins back, and when will a Ramondre Stevenson be back in that mix at running back, and a Trajan Bridges at wide receiver. I'm curious to see what the process is like for trouble for Delarian Turner Yellen and his injury. So, man, I get jacked when I start thinking about football for next year. It's like I got to calm myself down. It's late February, early March, and I don't know if we've had a spring game this anticipated in a while, just because we really haven't seen either one of these quarterbacks. Hurts took about every snap last year. Kyler the same the year before that. So I'm just I'm really juiced to kind of see exactly what goes down and what the aesthetics are and the optics for these two quarterbacks.
Are you looking at this as a true quarterback competition, or are you looking at it like I think I am and probably 95% of Sooner Nation, that this is really Spencer Rattler's job to lose, and if he comes in and falls flat on his face, then things can get interesting and Tanner Mordecai is just there for that purpose? Or do you really think Tanner Mordecai has a chance?
Look, I take Lincoln Riley at his word, and, you know, you can go back and you can ask just about anyone around that team whenever Austin Kendall and Kyler Murray were battling, and there were many that thought it was right down to the wire. And because, you know, Kyler in a couple of practices had, you know, had problems protecting the football. So maybe that draws guys closer. You want to ask anyone out there, they believe that Tanner Mordecai pushed Jalen Hurts last year. So with all that disclaimer, I always take Lincoln Riley at his word. But come on, it's going to be a massive upset if we sit there on the opening game of the season against Missouri State and anyone but Spencer Rattler trots out as the starting quarterback, right? I mean, I'll go along and we'll cover it and we'll talk about it, and I believe that it's a true battle. But on that Saturday against, I think it is Mo State that we're opening up against, if it's not Spencer Rattler, Matt, I mean, come on, it's a big shock to everyone, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And that's what I think. That's kind of what everybody's leaning towards, is that, yeah, they're going to, you know, Tanner Mordecai is going to get his reps. And Lincoln Riley, to true Lincoln Riley fashion, he's going to draw this out to about 2 weeks before kickoff, and then they're going to name the starter. But it's going to be such a shocking, momentous moment that there'll probably be riots in the streets if it's anybody but Spencer Rattler. Hey,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, part of that is our fault, right? Because we have built this dude up.
Right.
But then again, you know, I read your side, Matt. I peruse the boards. I see what people are fired up about. This was a guy that, if you want to look at it from a certain perspective, you could say that Lincoln Riley had handpicked from day one to be his guy. There is not a single player on this team right now that Lincoln Riley has been more in line with, in tune with, dialed into the Spencer Rattler. So you can completely understand why the excitement might be as high as it is to see what this guy could do, because you kind of get the feeling that this is the handpicked guy.
Back to the defensive side of the ball, a guy like Jalen Redmond, how big of a progression do you think he can make this spring going into next fall?
You know, it's kind of funny that you bring it up, because I love talking about guys that have been on campus for a couple of years. I really do. And I know that the natural thought/idea is, all right, I want to talk about the new guys that I haven't really seen yet, right? I want to see what our new recruits are going to do. But I'm always fascinated by the jump that guys can make from their freshman to sophomore year or sophomore to junior year. And I'm glad that you mentioned him, because in Jalen Redmond, you know, in guys like Caleb Kelly and guys like a Brian Asamoah. I'm really excited to see in Jaden Davis. I want to see what their next step is going to be, because they're going to be necessary pieces if this team is going to be a difference maker. I mean, Jalen Redmond, I thought, flashed at times whenever he was moved inside, and then it kind of disappeared to the point that, you know, during the Bedlam game, it took everyone kind of a while to realize, oh, Jalen Redmond isn't out here. So I want Redmond to get to the point where if he's not out there, it's something that we're talking about right away. You know, he's a guy that is that kind of difference maker. I think skill-wise, he has all the tools. I love what they've done with him. I think, you know, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting with, you know, Jamar Cain taking over, what kind of difference that can make. Because, again, I know Tibbs is on the defensive tackles, but you've got a guy like Cain that can look at something and maybe there's a technique that he sees, or maybe there's a different way he can challenge a Jalen Redmond. But, yeah, he's definitely on my list of guys that I'm really excited to see kind of the progression that they have made. And, you know, Trey Norwood's on that list for me too. And I don't know what his availability is going to be in the spring. Remember, you know, Caleb Kelly got hurt in the spring last year. The injury to Norwood was right before spring ball started, when camp started, fall camp. So I don't know what his prognosis might look like, but I'm really excited because I think that nickel position is going to be competitive. And I don't think any of us can truly grasp just how important it is in Alex Grinch's defense.
All right, real quick, who's a player that we haven't mentioned? Who's under the radar that you think might just kind of, hey, everyone's going to be talking about this kid by the end of spring?
Can I give you one offense, one defense?
Absolutely.
Stacey Wilkins.
Okay.
Stacey Wilkins. I think that he's got a great chance to kind of slide in and be the guy at left tackle. Now, we'll see. I know that's putting a lot on someone. We'll see how it pans out. But I think throughout the season last year, it's kind of wild to think of the success that an R.J. Proctor had there, you know, and how Eric Swenson battled through injuries. Because, you know, I think if Stacey Wilkins can be what we think he can be, you know, we're back to talking about the Joe Moore Award as not just, you know, one of the 20 semifinalists. We're talking one of the three finalists. And
right. Maybe
because you look at those two guards are just pure nasty. If Adrian Ealy on the right tackle spot gets healthy, you can slide Wilkins in at left. Creed Humphrey is a leader at center. I think they have the chance to be absolutely fantastic. And then on the defensive side, he made the big plays in the Baylor game, but I think he's just starting to scratch the surface. And that's David Agwebu. With, you know, a guy like a Jamar Cain coaching him, you watch him, maybe I throw Nick Benito in there as well too, who was the playmaker
right. In
the Baylor game. But those two guys to me, in that, you know, kind of unique position in what Coach Grinch appeared to do last year, I'm so fascinated in what athletically both of them can develop into, and maybe a little bit more so. And unfairly in Agwebu, just because he's got a little bit of a size edge on Nick Benito. But, you know, I start talking about defensive guys, and then where's Jeremiah Crudell in all this? How did he develop with a year in this system? What about some of those young corners? And, you know, did they step up? Did we start seeing something from them that can kind of change the whole mindset? Is who's going to be the oboe on this team that maybe we had talked about for 2 years that suddenly emerges defensively and is making plays left and right? So I get going on defense and I get fired up because I think there's talent there, Matt. I think there's really good football players. And I think we saw that start to come to the surface, but I think they have a chance to be a really, really special group this year.
Speaking of talent, Oklahoma with three projected first round draft picks coming up in April, your Las Vegas Raiders, two picks in the first round. You can take one sooner. You can only take one with one of those two picks. Who are you taking?
Well, it's kind of funny because I'm as big of a Kenneth Murray homer as you might find. So naturally, I'm inclined to just say Kenneth Murray. But I think CeeDee Lamb's got a chance to be the kind of difference maker that we're talking about for years. The only reason I would pause is because there's about 20 potential first or second round picks at a receiver, and the Raiders have a lot of holes. So I'll be greedy and say both, you know, with that, 12th and 19th pick that
right.
we have.
12th, 19th.
But I think I think in reality, there is a really good chance that when all this is said and done, that you're going to have not just three first-round picks, but three solidly in the first round, because I think Kenneth Murray is going to crush it at the combine. I think that's going to elevate his stock. I think Neville Gallimore is going to crush it at the combine. I think that's going to elevate his stock. And I think CeeDee Lamb's going to crush it at the combine. That's obviously going to elevate his stock as well, too. So I'm real excited for this week. You know, I think it's a big deal to have a couple of defensive guys that we're talking about in this mix. And trust me, man, defensive coordinators, linebackers, coach love guys who have athleticism and can cover. And Kenneth Murray can do both of those. So I've talked around it enough. I've talked myself into wanting CD, but man, if they end up with Kenneth Murray, I'm not going to complain at all. I'm starting to believe more and more that, you know, K-9 is kind of dead set for the Ravens, but then the more I think about it, I don't even know if he's going to be there by the time the Ravens pick.
Do you see his clock in a 4.4?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think he's going to run the fastest time maybe of any defensive player that's not a cornerback, trying to think of the really fast guy.
Well,
I think that's
what's crazy about it. As a linebacker, that's going to make him faster than the majority of the running backs in the NFL.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think he's going to put together a freakish time whenever he goes. He is, without a doubt, and I can say this about, he is going to go down as one of my all-time favorite Sooners, not just because of how good he was with us and how he always talked to the media, but I saw the dude grind. I mean, it's still wild to me to think that that body type came into Norman as a safety, and his first year at linebacker was spent going from the outside where he thought he was going to play to the inside and then embracing it. Were mistakes made? Absolutely. But this dude took on a challenge and wanted to be the best, and he's going to end up playing on Sundays as long as he stays healthy.
Okay, parting shots, Chris. Dallas Renegades, Bob Stoops, Landry Jones. 2-game winning streak, big game with Houston coming up this weekend. What are your thoughts on the XFL?
I'm ready to immerse myself in it. I haven't really had a chance to be the kind of fan I want to be because we've been traveling so much with softball. But we were having debates about whether or not the names were good on the road this past week. It's kind of fun to then turn on and you see Bob Stoops in a different element, kind of in a different zone. You see Landry Jones drinking Bud Light seltzers in the locker room. You see guys like Jordan Smallwood having success, Frank Alexander. I'm ready to immerse myself in this league. We haven't really had a chance to traveling so much, but I'm all in on the Renegades train. You know, don't forget either, it's not just Bob that's there. You know, Blake Kinsey is their equipment guy. Matt McMillan is down there with him. And Chris Woods, who was a defensive analyst here in Norman, spent some time, I think, in Lawrence. Chris Wood is his defensive coordinator and did a heck of a job. So, yeah, there's a lot of Oklahoma ties on that Dallas Renegades team. And I dig watching it. I just need to fully immerse myself because I've got the Renegades going the rest of the way to the playoffs.
You know, and that isn't even that's not even a slide to Jeff Badette, who's there and,
right,
and making
exactly.
And having an impact, you know. All right, Chris, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. We appreciate your time. Real fast, give us your Twitter handle. Tell people where they can find more information on you.
All right, you can hit me up. My Twitter is at Plank Show. That's at Plank Show on Twitter. And let's see, what else? That's really about it, man. Go follow us at OU on the Air for the Sooner Diehards. That's where we put all of our good radio network stuff and where you can find all the broadcasts. And man, I'm pumped to be back for some softball at Marita Hines Field on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and a big one for baseball, too, this weekend, man, as they head down to Houston for that huge, huge Big 12 SEC showdown. So it's a big weekend in Diamond Sports, Matt. Thanks for letting me promote it. I appreciate you having me on your show.
You bet, brother. We'll talk to you soon. I'll probably see you this weekend.
Sounds good, man. I'll see you then.
All right. See you, Chris.
All right, as much as we may not want to, we have to talk about Bedlam basketball. Oklahoma, look, there's no other way to say it. Pathetic performance, 83-66 loss in Stillwater to Oklahoma State in a game that, like we said, it was a must-win situation. Now, here's where Oklahoma is. 16-11 on the season, 2 games below 500 in conference play at 6-8. We've talked about Texas. I said on our latest podcast when Rich and I were together that Shaka Smart's on his way out the door at the University of Texas. That has been a bad season and a bad team in Austin. But guess what? They have the same record as Oklahoma now. Now, I'm not saying that there's pressure on Lon Kruger, that Lon Kruger is out the door. I'm not saying anything close to that. Just letting you know where this team is right now. And guys that typically contribute big time for Oklahoma basketball were no-shows. We talked about Brady Manick and his career day against Bedlam in Norman. Manick ended up with 2 points on the night. Kristen Doolittle, who has been on a tear as of recent, 11 points. Alondis Williams, who we kind of dubbed as our X Factor, you know, the guy that if all else fails, you can go to Alondis Williams. He had a double-digit scoring performance against the Baylor Bears. He put up 3 points. If it wasn't for Austin Reeves, this game would have been more of a massacre than it was. Austin Reeves did show up 24 points in the game. But what this does for Oklahoma, the magic number that we've been talking about all season long has been 20 wins. So you've got 4 games left on the season, and you got to pick up 4 wins. What you don't want is you don't want to have to borrow against the Big 12 tournament. And let's not forget that Lon Kruger's teams haven't performed well in the Big 12 tournament on that stage. Now, I'm not disparaging against Lon Kruger. I think this was more of a team effort than it was a coaching effort. But you got Texas Tech Tuesday night. You've got West Virginia on the road. You've got Texas in Norman, and you're at TCU. I think Oklahoma, there's no room for error here. You had one spot that maybe you could lose. Maybe you could drop a game against number 22, Texas Tech. Maybe you could drop a game at number 20, West Virginia. But that you know, one off is gone. We talked about trying to go 4-1 down this 5-game stretch, and when you drop the one immediately, you got to go 4-0. Now, I think if they can get 3, they go into Big 12 tournament at 19 wins on the season, you can still pick up that 20th win in the Big 12 tournament. But do you really want to count on that? I think the only way we can talk about this team being a lock for the NCAA tournament at this point, because they have moved, because it wasn't just a loss against a bad team, it was a bad loss against a bad team. 17 points against a bad team. Now, everything went right for Oklahoma State from the shooting perspective. Cowboys shot lights out. They couldn't miss. But it's a bad loss. And that moves you from the upper half of that bubble to the bottom of the bubble. And everyone's going to be watching. Now, the good news is you've got 2 games against ranked opponents that are winnable games. And this game Tuesday night against Texas Tech, it's at the Chesapeake Energy Arena. It is a home game for Oklahoma, but it's not Lloyd Noble Center. This team clearly plays different at home than they do on the road. We've been saying that for a while. But hopefully they play in Chesapeake the way they play at Lloyd Noble. Because they're riding a 3-game losing streak right now. The last win was a blowout win against Iowa State, 90-61. But what my fear is this, that we're going to get to the end of the season, and we're going to look at Oklahoma more of a lock for the NIT than we are the NCAA, and we're going to be scratching our heads going, what happened this season? And the reality is it's going to come down to 2 games. It's going to come down to Oklahoma's loss in Ames against Iowa State and their loss in Stillwater against Oklahoma State. That's what we're looking at if they can't run the table or at least win 3 of 4 and pick up a win in Kansas City. Thanks so much for listening to the Sooner Nation podcast. I'm Matt Hofeld. You can hit us up on Twitter at Sports Heartland. Find us on the web, heartland-sports.com. Give us a rating. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, everybody. Boomer Sooner. We'll be right back.